This is a production by One and All Media. For more, head to oneandall.media.
We've started this new series called The Cross Before Me because the cross impacts every area of your life. It's not just a religious symbol or a Christian symbol. The cross will give you everything that you're ultimately looking for. You say, really, Pastor Jeff, will you give me money? Money's not what you're after. What you're really after is security. Will the cross give you that? Yes. When you truly understand it, that's how you're going to get the freedom to live a courageous life.
Today
with Jeff Vines, pastor, apologist, and Bible teacher.
On this episode of Today with Jeff Vines, we have another message from the series called The Cross Before Me. If you miss any, you can find all messages in this series wherever you listen to podcasts. Here's Pastor Jeff to begin today's message.
Let me ask you a question as we get started this weekend. Do you ever stop and think just for a moment in the busyness of your life, what is it that you really want? What is it that you're really after? Not all the things that you do that you think are going to give you something, but underneath all of that, what is it that you're really after? Now, evidently, whatever it is that you're after, you don't have. Because social theorists tell us that, especially in America, in the West, we are the most discontent that we've ever been. We are the most discontent generation. And which is ironic, since we're the most affluent of any generation previous, and yet we're the most unhappy. So there's obviously something that we don't have that we're looking for, and we're very discontent. And according to the theorists, we're discontent in numerous areas. Economically, we're not happy. Psychologically, we're not happy. Politically, we're miserable. In fact, what do you believe? What name do you believe was the number one write-in vote of the last election? Now, a write-in vote is if you don't like either candidate, you write in someone's name. I'm going to give you multiple choice, all right? You've got five choices here, and you kind of think about which one do you think was the most popular write-in. Number one, Mickey Mouse. Now, all of these are written in, by the way. These are not just made up, but which one is the most popular? Number two, Jesus Christ. Number three, Vladimir Putin. Number four, Harry Potter. And number five, nobody. Now, who do you think was the most popular write-in name? And the answer, believe it or not, is Jesus Christ. Huh. I would have never guessed that. Evidently, our expectations are incredibly high. Now, think about this just for a moment. What is it? I'm starting to ask the question. You should ask, what do you want? What is it that you really, way down deep inside, you may not even be able to identify it. What is it that you want? And the social theorists who've done research on this for the last 50 years tell you that what you're really after is freedom. Now, it's not the kind of freedom where you do whatever you want all the time, because we've wised up on this, and I'm glad to hear this. We know now that that just doesn't work. Life would be unlivable if everybody did what they wanted to do. And besides that, there's an internal contradiction in your freedoms. Like, two freedoms that you want to have will contradict, so you have to choose between the two. The example I've used in the past is, you know, I want to, if it were up to me, I would eat cheeseburgers and donuts every day of my life. I would. And coffee and chocolate. That would be my diet. But if I want to live a long life so that I can spend time with my granddaughter, I can't do both of those. Now, if this was your granddaughter right here, would you not want to spend a long, long time with this little thing? So this is little Ada. So I have to make a decision between the two. I can't have both. So freedom, we're wise enough now to know that it's not doing whatever you want, whenever you want. And there's an external contradiction too. For instance, if I can't talk on my cell phone during the movie. People do. They should be in Leavenworth. They do, but those two freedoms contradict each other. The type of freedom that we're after, we are told, is the freedom to enjoy life and all of its goodness without the worry of the badness, of the anxiety, the stress, and all the fear that comes with it. So the freedom we want is to have relationships without the fear of loss, or travel without the fear of disease, or work without the fear of job loss, or earning an income without the fear of not having enough. So we've realized, I guess, how fragile we are, and we don't like it. We're used to having everything that we want. Now we want this. We want the freedom to do whatever we want without any damage or fear of damage to the things that matter most to us. Now, if this is the type of freedom that we want, I want you to hear me on this. If this is the type of freedom you want, that when you go through life with courage and vitality and you enjoy all the good things, and you know there's plenty of them, without this constant fear and anxiety and stress about what could go happen, what could go wrong with your job, with your family, with your children, whatever it is, there's only one way to do that. And I am not being facetious, and I'm not trying to be cute. This is not platitudinal. This is reality. The only way that you can have that kind of freedom, if that's what we really want, is through the cross of Jesus Christ. Because the cross of Jesus Christ offers you a radical freedom. And we've started this new series called The Cross Before Me, because the cross impacts every area of your life. It's not just a religious symbol or a Christian symbol. The cross will give you everything that you're ultimately looking for. You say, really, Pastor Jeff, will you give me money? Money's not what you're after. What you're really after is security. Will the cross give you that? Yes. When you truly understand it, that's how you're going to get the freedom to live a courageous life. You know, I love telling the story because it's a true story. It didn't happen to me. But there's a pastor, a famous pastor, who was downtown L.A. He was speaking downtown L.A., and then he went to a restaurant with some guys, and he thought, man, I'm going to hang out with these guys and see what downtown L.A. is like. And then they go into a restaurant and then a bar to have a few drinks. I don't know why, but this is what happens. He walks out at 2:30 in the morning. So he stayed a little longer than he wanted to try to connect with these guys. And as he walks out, over to his left, he sees two guys beating up another guy. I mean, they're really pulverizing this guy. Now, as a pastor, he knows he can't just ignore it. He's got to do something to protect this guy. So he musters up some courage, and he looks over and he says, hey, you guys, stop that. You can just hear a pastor saying that, can't you? Hey, you guys, stop that. And of course, these two thugs looked at him like they were, and then suddenly, he said it again, I told you, stop that. And their eyes, fearful, just fearful, a look of horror. And then they started to back away from this pastor. Then they ran away. The pastor, seeing that happen, just felt extremely courageous and said, and don't come back again. And then he turned to walk away, and he ran into Mongo, the 6'8", 285-pound bouncer of the club that they were just in. And they weren't afraid of him. They were afraid of Mongo. Now, what would it be like to go through life with someone bigger than Mongo on your side? But you have to understand, are you saying, Pastor Jeff, that if I get in a fight, Jesus is going to beat the guy up? No, you're missing the point. Until you understand what the cross is really about, you'll never be able to live a life of freedom, no anxiety, no depression, no stress, and you just go through life enjoying all the good stuff without being overwhelmed by all the things that could happen. To do that, you have to understand, first of all, the two primary responses people give to the cross and why, okay? Two primary responses. And remember, we're talking about the most recognized, respected symbol in the world. More recognizable than Nike. More than Apple. More than Google. More than Yahoo. So first, the response to the cross, especially in the West, is that you have a group of people, a large group of people, who are offended by the very idea. There was a young lady in New Zealand when I was ministering there. She had been educated at a private school, and now she was educating. She was a professor in a very highly respected, academic-wise, school, university. And I noticed every time we were together, and we were together often because we had a mutual friend. So anytime our mutual friend had a dinner party or had a gathering, we were both there. And I noticed that every time she saw me, she kind of had this disdain for me. And I didn't know why, because we'd never even spoken. And so finally, one day, I was alone with her in the kitchen while everyone was eating, and I just asked her, I said, hey, would you mind telling me, do you have a problem? He goes, yeah, you're one of those. And I said, one of what? You're a Christian. I said, well, tell me the problem that you have with Jesus. Is it his compassion? Is it his forgiveness? His care for the poor? His demand that all people be treated equally with respect and dignity? What is your problem with Jesus? She said, I don't like his cross. Now, in 1 Corinthians, Paul said this would happen. He said, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to the Jews and foolishness to the Gentiles. She says, Jeff, I'll tell you what I don't like. I don't like the cross. It's offensive to me. The cross has always been offensive, and it always will be. And historically, it's the self-proclaimed intellectuals who've been offended. The educated classes have found that the gospel is incredibly offensive. This visceral hostility, not to Jesus. Oh, no, Jesus, good man, good teacher, but to the cross of Jesus. Christopher Hitchens says this, a noted atheist, I am told of a human sacrifice that took place 2,000 years ago without my wishing it and in circumstances so ghastly that had I been present and in possession of any influence, I would have been duty-bound to try and stop it. In consequence of this murder, my own manifold sins are forgiven me and I may hope to enjoy eternal life. So Hitchens knows and acknowledges that the atonement is central to Christianity and the cross, but he finds it vicious, sadomasochistic. He finds it repellent. And the question is, why? What's so offensive? And here's the answer. The cross offends some people because the very idea that they are such bad people that God himself would have to offer up his own son as a sacrifice for them is intellectually contemptible and morally outrageous. So rather than to engage in conversation with us, they do what angry people do. They just insult us. Bertrand Russell said, no one who is profoundly human could believe God would punish sin like that. So notice, they're not saying, hey, we have a disagreement, let's talk. They're just saying, I hate your belief so much that rather than talk about it or conversation, I'm just going to call you stupid, contemptible, and not profoundly human. And that's why, now not among all educated masses, not among all intellectuals, there are plenty of intellectuals who had followed Jesus for hundreds of years. Blaise Pascal, the father of the computer, James Simpson, the discoverer of chloroform. The list is long of great intellectuals who have been Christ followers. But today in the West right now, it appears to be that the intellectual crowd is moving farther and farther away from Jesus. And it's not because of Jesus, it's because of the cross. It offends them. So offensive to them. So they become visceral or angered or offended. And again, they don't hate Jesus, they hate the cross. And part of the reason that you're getting this response is because of the same reason Paul got that response among the Greeks in his day. Because the intellectual crowd believes that the solution to the West, the solution to the world, is not the cross. They believe the solution is education and wisdom. If we could just educate people to have the right philosophy, the right social and political structures, then the world would be a much better place and we'd all be free from its ills. We'd be free to live our lives. Wisdom and education, that's what we need. The right political, social structure, philosophical system, that's what's going to save us. If you know anything about Jesus, the cross says the problem is not wisdom. The problem with humanity is its wicked heart. In fact, you think about what's going on right now in our country. Socialism is on the rise. Capitalism is on the defensive. You never thought you'd see a day where that has happened. We are as divided now as we've ever been. But if you step back and think about it for a moment, the truth is that if people were basically good and there was an absence of greed and envy and jealousy and oppression and abuse, well, the fact of the matter is just about any social or political system would work, right? The problem is not the systems. The problem is the people who operate them. Now, I'm not suggesting for a moment that all political and social structures are equal. I'm just simply saying that all systems exploit the poor to a degree, abuse the weak, not because the system is wrong, but because the human heart is selfish, narcissistic, corrupt, and greedy. Someone once said, man is basically good. It's only his behavior that lets him down. That's like saying chocolate cake and ice cream are healthy choices. It's only the fat, sugar, and calories that hurt you. And if you know anything about the gospel, Jesus did not say, you know what, you people are basically good down there. You have a knowledge and a wisdom problem, so I'm just going to teach you some good life principles and then everything will be fine. No, Jesus said, the problem is you got a wicked heart. You are prideful. You're self-serving. You need a heart transplant. And quite frankly, that offends the intellectual who believes salvation is found in wisdom and structures. And when they hear that you're telling me that I'm so wicked and rebellious that the very Son of God had to leave heaven and come to earth and do nothing less than die for me to save us, Yeah, right. That's offensive. Someone said that the presence of God or the presence of the Son of God on earth is an indictment against every single one of us. The fact that he had to come down. You know, I love those God billboards that I keep seeing as I travel in major cities. Don't you? I don't know who pays for them. Doesn't really matter, but they're really cute. Here's one of my favorites. If you must curse, use your own name. God. Or how about this one? That love your neighbor thing, I meant that. And then this one. Well, you did ask for a sign, God. But here's my favorite right here. Don't make me come down there. Okay, the fact is we did make God come down, and it's an indictment against every single one of us, and that is offensive to the educated intellectual crowd. Not all, but a significant number. There's a second category, so before you throw the intellectuals under the bus, I'm sorry to tell you, but the other category is just the common man, you and me. The common man is offended. The common woman is offended by that same cross, because the common person doesn't think for a minute that the intellectuals have the answers or solutions. In fact, the common man is cynical toward the intellectuals who sit in a classroom and are out of touch completely with real life. But he thinks, the common man or common woman thinks, the real problem is that we just have too many bad people and not enough good people. If people would just be good, then everything would be okay and we would have that kind of freedom. If people would just work hard and be a good citizen, a good father and a good mother, be a good worker, an all-around good person, then that would save us. The real problem, criminals, bad people. We just have too many of them. People just need to be good. One of my favorite movies, Arnold Schwarzenegger. You might have heard of him. In True Lies. And in the movie, he plays a spy. And his job is to annihilate threats to the national security, and if you've seen the movie, there are a lot of threats to the national security because he's killing a lot of people. Somewhere along the line, his wife, played by Jamie Lee Curtis, discovers what he does. He's hid it from her most of their married life. She recognizes all of a sudden who her husband really is, and I love that scene where it dawns on her that he may have killed some people, so she says to him, "Did you ever kill anyone?" And he says, "Yeah, but they were all bad." The common person says, "Remove all the bad people, and we'll all be saved, we'll be okay, we'll be safe, we'll be free." But what does the cross of Jesus Christ say? It tells us that there's no difference between good and the bad, the Pope and the prisoner, the preacher and the prostitute when it comes to our relationship with God. And that's offensive to religious, pious people. In fact, Romans 3 says this, "There is no difference between Jew and Gentile, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God." No difference between the common man and the intellectual. We're all in the same boat. And when a religious person hears that, when a righteous person hears that, that's reprehensible to talk like that, that somehow we could place the pious and the prostitute in the same category, deeply offensive. You mean to tell me, they would say, that I've worked so hard to be good all my life? It takes a lot of effort to be good. I got to go to church and read my Bible and pray and do good things. I'm tired of being good. And you're telling me I spend my whole life trying to be a good person, and this prisoner over here who's killed a few people finds Jesus in prison a couple of years before his death, and he's in the same standing with God as I am? Yeah. No way. They find that preposterous. I'm better than that, they will say. But the Bible tells you that if two people, let's say three people started from San Diego and they're going to swim to Hawaii. Three people. One's not a very good swimmer. He's going to drown within 100 yards. The other's a pretty good swimmer. Swam on the high school swim team, got a scholarship to San Diego State University. Maybe he can swim 10 miles. Then you got another one, maybe Olympic swimmer, great swimmer. Maybe they go 100 miles, but they're all going to drown sooner or later, aren't they? They're all going to drown. And the message of the cross is that some of you may be better than others, relatively speaking. You may pursue purity more than others. You may have a greater character and integrity than other people, relatively speaking. You might be a better father, better mother, better student, citizen. You may exhibit a greater level of patience and self-control. But the reality is, when it comes to loving the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor as yourself, you're all going to drown. And part of the problem is, you've severely underestimated the distance between the holiness of God and your own personal purity. The shore is too far away. And you underestimate the damage sin and wicked hearts can do to your neighbor. Everyone drowns eventually. And the gospel says you need the cross. You need a savior. And the common person says, that's reprehensible and I want nothing to do with that. I'm a good person. Think about how your family and friends respond to the gospel. They do one of two things. One, they either block it out completely. I don't want to think about God. It's too hard. It's too convicting. And it may require life change. You know that's what they're thinking, but they won't say it. And then there's the second category who will tell you, yeah, family member. Yeah, I believe in God. Good God. Yeah, I believe God is there. But they minimize severely the goodness and the holiness of God. They'll say something like, yeah, I believe God exists, but I'm basically good. If God is real, I'm okay. If I die, I'll be in a good place. There's nothing wrong with me. And when you tell them you're wrong, there's something gravely wrong with you, and you're the object of the wrath of God because of your sin, they'll get angry with you. That's preposterous in their mind. They'll get vitriolic. I don't need that, they'll say. I'm not falling for that. I'm not that stupid. You can't make me feel guilty. I'm not that weak. I don't need a savior. I don't need God to do that on my behalf. And the point is that the cross is so democratic, it offends everyone. Everyone is offended. You know, I love the story in John 8 where the pious, righteous people, law keepers, take the woman who had been caught in adultery and throw her down at Jesus' feet. And, of course, Jesus, that famous statement where he says, those of you who are without sin, some theologians say, you know, the word used there is without this particular sin. So he's saying, those of you who haven't done this yourself, you throw the first stone, they all walk away. But if you notice a few chapters later, they still want to kill him. Why? Why are they so angry? They're angry because Jesus put her sin on the same level as theirs. Think about Paul, who was Saul before he was Paul, who was incredibly pious and righteous. He went around killing Christians. Now, why would you go around as a pious, righteous man killing other people who were trying to do the good? Because he didn't like what they taught. They taught that Paul or Saul was equal with the prostitute and the tax collector. And that was livid. It made him, he wanted to just kill all of them and silence them because he had worked far too hard to be put on the same plane as people who weren't religious or righteous or pious. Romans 3 says, there is no difference between Jew and Gentile, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So you have the intellectuals who are offended. I don't need a sacrifice by anyone. You have the common man offended. I'm one of the good ones. I don't need that kind of radical forgiveness like a cross. And to the latter crowd especially, because they're in a lot of our churches in the West, then the question is, well, what about those of us who fail often? What about those of us who aren't as good as you? What about those of us who are tainted by life experiences and we're just trying to get over the baggage of life? Do we have no hope? What about those who have grabbed something? It's destroying them, but they don't have the strength to let it go. Is there no hope for them either? Is it really about how good you are? Malcolm Muggeridge said, if the complaint is made that in Christianity, heaven is restricted to those who trust in Christ and is therefore limited, I shudder to think of how few will be in heaven if goodness determines that number. Do you see how inclusive the cross really is? We always associate the cross with exclusivity. But the cross tells you no matter who you are, you can come to the cross. Preacher, politician, prostitute, seeker, soul searcher, sex addicts, whoever you are, whatever you are. But in order to come to the cross, you have to admit you need that kind of radical forgiveness. And that is offensive to many. The cross stands in utter judgment of all of us, every human being. You cannot stay neutral at the foot of the cross. The only way you can stay neutral is if you don't understand it. The cross will either offend you or transform you.
You've been listening to Today with Jeff Vines. Thanks for joining us. Next time, we'll bring you the rest of this message from Pastor Jeff.
Some will say, well, Jeff, you know what? I don't think you understand me. I don't hate the cross. I mean, I respect it. It's a great symbol. I respect the cross, but I'm not possessed by it. I'm not one of those radical Christ followers. Do you know why? You neither hate it, nor are you overwhelmed by it. It's because you don't get it. You don't understand it. Your eyes have not been open yet.
You can listen to more messages like this. Just search for Today with Jeff Vines wherever you get your podcasts. You make me wanna dance and sing with every single breath I breathe. I will bring this offering. You
Today.
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 Today with Jeff Vines.
This is a production by One and All Media. For more, head to oneandall.media.